Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. As The Who gears up for the last leg of what the band swears will be its last tour, a claim first made in the 1980s, they've been opening shows with their first proper single, I Can't Explain, written more than five decades ago when rock was still seen as a passing fad. It's a testament to a band that helped define the look and sound of an era, and whose legacy will be felt for as long as there are guitarists with Marshall Stacks. But as renowned rock author Mark Blake writes in his latest book, Pretend This Is a War, The Who in the 60s, at many points, the band barely lasted the decade. As Pete Townsend says, he thought he'd do The Who for a few months before returning to art school. The world had other plans. Here to tell us the story is Mark Blake, who's also written about Pink Floyd, Queen, and Keith Richards. Mark Blake, welcome to the Roundtable.
Hi there. Thanks for having us.
How come you wanted to focus on the group in this specific era of its life?
I think because The Who's whole story, you know, which is now 50 years, is a bit of a mess, really, in a good way. And I just felt that it was time to maybe take a different look at it. Look, it's such a big story, a big sprawling story. And obviously there's a period in the 1980s when not that much happens. So I thought it was good to just go back and focus. And I think as time went on, I became fascinated by where they came from and what was the source of all this.
Well, give us a sense of what that was. What was it like in their neighborhoods? What was it like in the country? And how did the band, you know, sort of come to be?
Well, I think, you know, the Beatles, like the Kinks and Stones, The Who, like the Kinks and Stones and the Beatles, all grew up, you know, in the shadow of the Second World War, which is a huge thing here. You know, they had parents and elderly relatives who fought in the war. London particularly was full of bomb sites, you know, at that time. And I think more than any of those bands, it seemed to impact on The Who, very much on Pete Townsend's songwriting and what he wrote about. And I think, you know, that landscape into which they arrived is very much reflected in those songs, you know, Can't Explain, My Generation, the two that immediately spring to mind. And I think that was the world into which they came. They were born in a sort of middle-class suburb. I mean, Townsend and Entwistle, more kind of middle-class suburbs of West London. Daughtry from a little bit more of what we call a working-class suburb of West London. I grew up in very near to where those guys grew up. And some years later, I drank in the same pubs that The Who played in as much younger men. That was another reason that you felt like I was writing about a part of the world that I had some knowledge and experience of.
Except there is that one part where you write about an important club early in the band's life that's now a pair of apartment high-rises.
That's right. I mean, that was a pub. That, in fact, was the pub I first went into when I was...
Oh, wow.
15 or 16, and it was well known in the area as a pub that The Who had played in. This is obviously where Pete Townsend first smashed his guitar in summer 1964 by mistake, and obviously then turned it into a gimmick and something that, you know, became a very defining part of their image and their sound.
Part of what made the band so successful in the early going in the club scene was a sense of things were going to be unpredictable at the shows early on. And a lot of that had to do with the interpersonal dynamics in the group. These were not, you know, four best friends. Can you kind of take us through some of the rivalries at play between the lineup?
The thing with the Who is they never even pretended to be great friends, even at the beginning. Most bands will put on a show for the sake of a journalist or something, but the Who never did. I think a lot of the tension goes back to, you know, they were at school, three of them were at school together. Daughtry, Townsend and Entwistle were all at school. Daughtry was a year older than Townsend and Entwistle when they were at school together, so there was a pecking order there. Daughtry was a very formidable guy at school, you know, he was quite a tearaway, and I think that factored into it as well. He kind of ruled the band to begin with. It was his group. He put them together, you know, and I think the dynamic shifted over quite quickly over a couple of years, particularly once Keith Moon came into the group. Moon was significantly younger than them, and he wasn't scared of Daughtry. You know, Moon didn't seem to be scared of anyone. You know, he had that sort of fearless quality about him. So that adds another layer of complication. And on top of that, you know, after you got past the 64, 65, some of the band, Daughtry, not Daughtry, but the others were, you know, taking drugs. This was another point of this was another problem for them, for specifically for Daughtry, and this all led to tension. Yeah, Daughtry was a singer, didn't want to take pills, you know, just wanted to concentrate on doing his gig. The others were getting completely wasted and out of it some of the time. Anyway, eventually it spilled over into a fight. So towards the end of around 65, end of 64, it turned into a full scale fight. After a gig in Denmark, in fact, at which point they threw him out of the band. The rest of them ganged up and threw Daughtry out of the band. They let him back in again, at which point they started to have big hit singles. And, you know, it led to an uneasy relationship. I think it's a relationship that's become easier over the years, but that was the root of it. You know, very, very different characters, very different people.
One thing I learned from your book that I never really realized was that originally, before the band even settled on the name The Who, Daughtry was the guitar player. When Townsend joined up, he really lost a lot of power because A, you know, Pete was writing the songs, but B, he was now, you know, the guitarist, and Daughtry lost his original role.
Yeah, I think that's what happened. That happened gradually over a period of time because they were schoolboys, really. I mean, Daughtry had the band together just pretty much while he was still at school and left school, and he obviously had a day job. He worked in a steelworks. He was an apprentice there, and part of that was he did cut his hands. His hands would get cut during the course of the day and make it painful to play the guitar. I think one of Pete Townsend's first gigs with the group, they were called the Detours at that time. They had a few names, but the Detours was the one they used the most. He had to step up and play lead guitar. You know, that lead guitar was really Roger's gig at the time. So, yeah, later on, the balance of power shifted, like you say, and I think the main thing, I think, is when Townsend began writing songs. Because obviously, to begin with, they're playing other people's songs. They're playing wedding receptions, you know, birthday parties, bar mitzvahs. You know, they are booked to play other people's songs. And there's that point, once the groups like the Beatles and the Stones start writing their own material and becoming successful, that a lot of groups said, well, hey, we have to write our own songs. Of course, with a lot of these groups, weren't able to do that. The Who were. And in Townsend was a kind of secret weapon. And I think once he started writing songs, that's when the balance of power really started to shift.
I don't mind other guys dancing with my girl. That's fine.
How important was management to what we know of The Who today? Because I think Lambert and Stamp have kind of gotten their due in the last, you know, recent times. There's been a documentary out about them. They had a series of different managers leading up to Lambert and Stamp taking over, but things really started to catch fire when they did, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you can't underestimate the role of Kit Lambert and Chris Stamp in this story. And you mentioned the film that's come out about them. It really is a great documentary. It's an extraordinary story. And I think that's another reason why I wanted to write this book, because those two guys were fascinating to me. I did meet and interview Chris Stamp some years ago. Obviously, neither of them are with us anymore now. But yeah, they absolutely drove the band forward. Before that, they'd had, you know, a couple of local guys, for want of a better word, looking after them. It had been a much smaller thing. Lambert and Stamp came into it. They came from a film industry background. They both worked as director's assistants on films, so they had a bigger vision. That saying that, they were making up as they went along. They didn't have any money, but they had a lot of charm, a lot of front, as we would say in the UK. And they were able to kind of, you know, hustle their way through and hustle the band's career along as a result of that. I mean, Kit Lambert was a very aristocratic guy. His father had been a conductor for the Royal Ballet in London. Chris Stamp came from the East End of London. His brother, older brother, Terence Stamp, was a very good up-and-coming working-class actor. You later see in a lot of films, including the Superman movies later on in the 80s. But yeah, that's where their background. They were two completely different guys, but they came together, and between them, they had it covered.
Part of what made the band successful in the early days was a very competitive spirit, which is partially where the title of your book comes from, Pretend You're in a War. Can you just talk about the attitude the group had and how they used it to promote themselves?
Yeah, well, I mean, Pretend You're in a War was a quote. It was a quote I found that Pete Townsend had come up with in an interview that I've only ever seen reproduced once before. He was asked, I think it was in the early 60s, how do you prepare to go on stage? He said, pretend you're in a war. They came out with this very combative attitude. The idea was to, you know, they were fighting between themselves, and then they ended up kind of fighting the audience, fighting for attention. They wanted to be noticed, so that's what the whole thing was about. And obviously the competition as well. Townsend is very unusual among musicians in that he will quite happily admit that he's jealous of other bands, that he was jealous of the Stones or the Beatles when he was growing up. And he continued that envy throughout his own career. However successful he is, he's talked quite openly later on about, you know, being worried about being kind of deposed by other younger musicians and songwriters as the years have gone by. And I don't think it's a false modesty. I think he's just honest and kind of voices what a lot of musicians and big rock, famous rock stars are thinking, but possibly aren't willing to admit in public. So that there's that whole thing, competition, fighting to be heard, fighting to be heard over the others in the band, and also fighting to be heard over the Kinks and the Rolling Stones and the Beatles.
You were able to talk to Townsend and Daltrey, the two surviving members of the group. Now, as they look back on this era, what do you make of their reminiscences about what the 60s was like? I mean, obviously, they charted a course. They became, you know, one of the biggest bands of all time. But a lot of people's feelings got hurt along the way, including in the band.
Mm. Well, I should clarify that I've interviewed Daltrey and Townsend several times,
sure.
Specifically Daltrey, but not for this book. For magazine stuff. So the book is unauthorized. So they had no editorial input into what I said or what we wrote. But yeah, I think they both share the same view in some ways. They both publicly talked about the importance of the Second World War and their lives growing up in London and just how crucial that was to the development of The Who. And again, that was an area I really wanted to bring to life in this book. I think they're kind of honest about it. I think, again, there is an honesty about The Who that you don't always get with other bands. They're extremely self-critical, which I've always found very refreshing. There is some guilt. There is a lot of regret there. I mean, obviously, they lost Keith Moon relatively young. Kit Lambert is now dead. Kit Lambert died not that long after Keith Moon. And obviously, they lost Entwistle, you know, this century. But I think these things, I think that there's a bit of regret there. But I think there's also a pride in what they've achieved and possibly a sense that this is a great body of work of which they can be proud.
What do you make of the current tour and, you know, the current iteration of the group? Some people are critical and call it, you know, The Two more than The Who at this point.
Yes, right. Yeah, they are known as The Two now around here. I have mixed feelings about it. I saw a show they did at Hyde Park last summer, this year in fact, and it was magnificent. It was excellent. Saw a show they did at the O2 Arena a few months before that, which really wasn't great. They felt very rusty. Obviously, a lot of the shows, certainly some of the shows, were cancelled or postponed because Daltrey's voice was going, and obviously this US tour has been postponed because of his ill health. I think when they get it together, when it works on a good night, you get a great glimpse of what they were back in the day. Having seen them with John Entwistle and others in the band, I don't feel it's the same, but I think it's the nature of the beast now, this time. These guys are still alive. They still want to, it's their music. They want to present it. It's taking half a dozen people or more on stage to do so. But when it clicks and when it works, I still think they're an excellent, excellent live band. Are they as good as they were in the 70s or 60s? No, probably not, but it's different. You know, it's their right, it's their songs, and it's theirs for them to do what they see fit with. I still think they have it when the night is good.
You know what I find interesting about it, and I'm sure you do too, is Townsend is disparaging about sticking with The Who for as long as there's been a Who, and yet, you know, it's 2015, soon to be 2016, and, you know, the music, as you say, is still vibrant at times, and he's still there playing it.
Yes, I mean, they're full of contradictions, The Who. Townsend contradicts himself all the time in interviews and just generally. I think that's part of what makes it what it is. I mean, he went for a long period, like I said earlier, particularly in the 1980s. They split up originally in 1982. He went off and did a lot of other things and was very disparaging about The Who. But he seems to keep coming back to it. And I'm sure, and, you know, there's no doubt about it. Money has been a deciding factor in this. You know, they were offered enormous amounts of money to tour in the 80s and the 90s, and I'm sure they're not going out for a small amount of money now. And the money is a big part of it, particularly when John Entwistle was still alive. And also, remember, Daltrey didn't write songs. So Townsend is wealthier than the others because he has the publishing. So I think those are factors here. But I think it's like anything else. His solo work, there is some great Pete Townsend solo albums, and there's some really not so great Pete Townsend solo albums, and there are lots of not very good Roger Daltrey solo albums. They're never better than when they're working together. And it's that thing that applies to, you know, Jagger and Richards in the Rolling Stones or David Gilmour and Roger Waters in Pink Floyd. They're never as good on their own as they are when they're together. And that's definitely the case with Townsend and Daltrey.
Mark Blake is the author of Pretend You're in a War, The Who and the 60s. Mark, it's a great read and it's been a pleasure to have a chance to ask you about it. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you very much.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Ladies and gentlemen.